Okay, don't skip ahead. I'm going to talk to you about climate change. And I know it can get depressing or infuriating, but our show takes a different approach. It's Laura Lynch, and I'm the host of What on Earth, and we're all about solutions and hope. And I promise, no matter how overwhelming climate change might feel, we're with you on the journey to fix this mess. So listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning. I'm Chris O'Neill Yates in St. John's. We begin in the Middle East, in the waters south of Iran. That's where Iranian special forces have seized an Israeli-affiliated cargo ship. Video of the incident appears to show a helicopter hovering above the vessel. Commandos from Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard reportedly rappelled down and took control of the ship. According to Iranian state media, it is now being transported to Iran's territorial waters. Israel has responded, saying Iran's actions amount to a pirate operation in violation of international law. This is all happening as concerns grow in Israel over a possible attack by Iran. That has prompted several countries, including Canada, to issue warnings to avoid travel to Israel. Joining me now from Jerusalem is reporter Iris Makler. Iris, what is the mood like on the ground there?
I'd say the mood is very fearful. People are talking about nothing but Iran. They hear the warnings from the Canadian government, from the US government, from France, and people here are very worried. They're worried about two things. One is their own safety. And the second is, where will this end up? Because, you know, this would be the first time that another nation has attacked Israel from its own territory. That's what Iran is threatening. And that hasn't happened since 1991. So if that does happen, and there is an Israeli retaliation, then that is a spiral that no one here can see the end of. And that's why I think everyone is so worried, because it's another conflagration on top of what we've seen so far, which was quite terrible enough.
Now, there's been an escalation of violence in the West Bank over the death of an Israeli boy. Iris, what can you tell us about that?
I can tell you there has been an escalation in violence ever since a 14-year-old Jewish settler went missing while he was out tending sheep near the Palestinian village of Al-Murayah, which is in the vicinity of Ramallah. As a result, Jewish settlers from his settlement and from further afield went on what has been described by Palestinian sources as a rampage inside the town of Al-Murayah looking for that teenager. They didn't find him, but there was violence between the Palestinians and the Jewish settlers. The IDF was called in. Palestinians report that the IDF soldiers used live fire. They are also reporting one Palestinian has been killed and a number more have been injured. What we now know is that the body of that Israeli teenager has been found, and the IDF, that's the Israel Defense Forces, say they are bracing for further violence in that area around Ramallah.
Iris Makler in Jerusalem, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Six people in Australia have been killed in a stabbing attack.
I saw a woman lying on the floor in Chanel, so it was insane. It was insanity. I wasn't expecting it.
One eyewitness describing the chaos and panic inside a Sydney shopping centre. Police say more than a dozen people were attacked by a man with a large knife. Eight were injured and are in hospital, including a nine-month-old child. It happened mid-afternoon local time, a busy time at the mall. Journalist Phil Mercer has more.
Australian police believe a lone attacker was responsible for the horrors at one of Sydney's busiest shopping centres. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
We should allow this investigation to take place. It would appear that this person has acted alone. The motives are not known yet.
The knifeman was shot dead by a police officer inside the mall. This man saw what happened.
Just as we were coming around the corner, there he was. He just came in and just started floating towards us, and all I heard was, put it down. And then she shot him. She didn't shoot him. Well, he would have kept going. He was on the rampage. He was on the bloody rampage.
Shoppers were forced to flee the Westfield shopping centre or seek shelter inside.
And I was hiding in the back room, and I was just hearing gunshots. It was just like people.
Several people, including a nine-month-old baby, have been taken to hospital. Some are in a serious condition. Phil Mercer for CBC News, Sydney.
The death of a French Catholic priest suspected of sex abuse is upsetting Inuit leaders in Canada. He died this week at the age of 93. His death is raising concern his alleged victims may never find justice. Juanita Taylor reports.
It's a collective failure.
Natan Obed, president of Inuit Teparik Anitami, says the Catholic Church and the Canadian and French governments didn't do enough to get Johannes Revoir to face charges of sexual assault against Inuit children.
I see this as a lasting memory that we will have about the limitations of reconciliation when it comes to the Catholic Church.
For decades, efforts were made to get Revoir back to Canada. Revoir evaded trial by staying in his home country, protected by French law that says it doesn't allow their citizens to be extradited.
I thought that this death suits the Oblates and their organization very well.
Lieve Verhausberger, a Belgian human rights activist, has been working with Revoir's alleged victims and their families.
Because now they think that the whole issue is buried with Revoir.
She blames the Catholic Church for protecting Revoir, especially after it hired a retired judge to investigate the accusations made against him. André Saint-Denis released his report last month, saying he believes the accusations and that the church knew nothing of them.
There are very few criminals from the Catholic Church brought to justice.
Halsberger says her work will continue despite Revoir's death, who died Thursday at the age of 93. Juanita Taylor, CBC News, Rankin Inlet, Nunavut.
Alberta Premier Daniel Smith is threatening to take legal action against the Trudeau government after Ottawa unveiled its national housing strategy. That includes plans to build on public land and billions of dollars for low-cost rental apartments. Host of the CBC Radio's The House, Catherine Cullen, has more.
We're prepared to take them to court.
Alberta Premier Danielle Smith says the federal government isn't respecting her province. She argues Alberta is not getting its fair share of per capita funding on housing, and she doesn't like that some housing infrastructure money is coming with conditions attached, like new zoning rules or suggestions of climate-friendly housing. So Smith has put forward what she calls the Not in My Backyard bill, saying the federal government will have to deal directly with the province and not municipalities, school boards, or other agencies. And she says she won't accept Alberta losing out on federal funding because they won't play by the federal government's rules.
We'll either see them at the bargaining table or we'll see them in court, but we will not stand by while they continue to treat Alberta municipalities unfairly.
Federal Housing Minister Sean Fraser pans the new bill.
If Alberta wants to add a layer of bureaucracy to approve funding decisions by the federal government, they're within their rights to do so. It will slow things down.
He's still hopeful the two sides can come to a deal on federal housing money, though he wants Alberta to come to the table with funding too.
If we can work together, we can have Alberta step up to the table with investments and policy changes that will make it easier to build homes.
Fraser argues Alberta has gotten its fair share of housing accelerator funding, and he says no one wants to hear politicians fight over jurisdiction. They just want to see more homes built. Catherine Cullen, CBC News. Ottawa.
Round three of the Masters gets underway today in Augusta, Georgia, and weather-wise, it's looking much calmer. Freelance reporter Steve Futterman explains.
During round one, the issue was rain. Yesterday, the rains disappeared, replaced by another complicating factor, wind. Some longtime Masters regulars said they were some of the strongest winds they've ever seen. It impacted pretty much all the players, including the world's top-ranked golfer, Scottie Scheffler.
It was extremely challenging. The winds were up very high.
There were gusts up to 60 kilometers an hour, resulting at times in small sandstorms as sand blew out from the sand traps. Ireland's Shane Lowry.
There's a lot of luck involved out there today. It's, you know, the wind is all over the place. I've never seen it like this.
Canada's Corey Connors agreed he saw plastic cups flying and napkins.
Lots of things blowing around.
Despite the problems, round two was completed. Halfway through the Masters, there's a three-way tie for first among Scheffler and two other Americans, Bryson DeChambeau and Max Homa. Connors is the top Canadian. He's eight back at two over par. Tiger Woods is at one over. He made the cut for a record 24th straight year.
I'm here. I got a chance to win the golf tournament.
Today, the winds are expected to be calmer and we should see better scores. Yesterday, only eight of the 89 golfers finished the round under par. Steve Futterman for CBC News at the Masters in Augusta.
And that is the latest national and international news from World Report. I am Chris O'Neill Yates in St. John's. This is CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.